Welcome to Baseball America's College Podcast. Baseball America, bringing you baseball news you can't get anywhere else for more than 35 years. Now it's time to talk college baseball.
Thank you, Dave Slade, and thank you for tuning in to today's Baseball America Podcast. Our podcast and all of our Facebook Lives are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out baseballism.com or visit the retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, Chicago, and Atlanta. Visit baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. We can't show you the baseballism because we're just doing a podcast today.
But by the way, thank you for those of you who you have used the code. I was at the Baseballism store last week, or at the Braves stadium opener.
Well, you were there for a couple.
Right, but that was the official stadium opener. The other was a soft launch, but the official, like in a game that counts and all that, no one besides the 25,000 of us who were there will remember the Yankees using, I think, six relievers in one inning in a...
So like a regular game.
Yeah, so...
That's going to be another topic.
But thank you for doing that. When you do that, you not only get great baseballism gear, but you also are supporting us, and we appreciate that.
Definitely, and having fun with that and having fun with the Facebook Lives, and hope people enjoy those as well. It's a busy part of the season for us here at Baseball America.
That's why the volume has cut down a little bit on the podcast. We're sorry, but...
Yeah, everything's going on for sure. I mean, between the minor league season, the major league season, high schools, colleges, drafts, we've been out to... It's so weird how many games and different games everyone here has been going to. Well, it's not really weird. I will echo, I think it was a Hudson Belinsky tweet, just how much everyone on the staff has been grinding. It's been pretty inspirational, actually, the last couple weeks. Dudes at high school games, college games, minor league games. You were the major league opener, the home opener for the Braves. It's just been a high volume of quality content at baseballamerica.com and in the magazine. So I hope people are enjoying that. Feel free to let us know. You can just email me, johnmanuel@baseballamerica.com, or all of us are first name, period, last name, @baseballamerica.com. That's the new email convention.
But the thing with that is that I would say, though, if you were to accurately say it, why we cut the podcast volume down a little bit, the draft is the overriding reason right now, because it's coming soon.
But that's why we're doing a draft podcast.
And that's why we could do a draft podcast that could probably go, we're not going to, but we could go 4 hours right here, because it is, there's a lot happening.
There is a lot happening, JJ. It's an interesting draft class because every year it feels like scouts are complaining about the draft class, but it feels like this year I get it because this was supposed to be one of the more predictable years because it was supposed to be, this is a good college pitching first round. This is going to be a college pitching draft. There are going to be a lot of college pitchers that we'll feel confident about as an industry. You know, that's the way scouts were saying it. And they'll go out and see these guys on Friday nights and line them up, and you take who you like and you take who you like. When there's good college players with
it's
a higher degree
of
certainty, it's an easier draft. And I'll give you an example of why. That's why it's good for me to go to some of these high school games that aren't showcases. So I went to go see Greg Jones of Cary High School. I think that was Tuesday night.
Yeah.
So Tuesday night, and Carlos Collazo went to go see him Wednesday night. So... Greg Jones is an interesting player. Probably never thought he'd be the subject of a Baseball America podcast opening, but he is. So Greg Jones, he's old for the class. He's a UNC Wilmington signee. If he were to go to UNC Wilmington, he would be eligible as a sophomore. So he's a switch-hitting shortstop at Cary High School, right outside of Raleigh. 160,000 bedroom community, so it's a nice-sized, you know, good high school baseball in that area. A lot of the better players wind up going to UNC Wilmington or play here in the Triangle area at NC State or North Carolina. I would say the best player who's come out of here recently is Max Posey. He went to Green Hope High, so he's a AA, right, with the Mariners. Just try to put a little context. So Greg Jones is very different from Max Posey. He's like 5'11", 6', switch-hitting shortstop with speed. So you go to see him on Wednesday, and I didn't get there 2 hours early, because I have a job, and it's not just going to games like scouts do. I got there a few minutes before game time with my 12-year-old, and three scouts there from two teams. And they got to see in and out, JJ, so that's where they got to see his arm. He did not throw the ball in the game, except for throwing it around the horn or to the pitcher. Well, his three plate appearances were line drive to left field, caught by the left fielder. Off a submariner, by the way. And I don't mean a I mean a knuckle scraper. I mean, this guy was...
He
was Chad Bradford-ish. And that's the starter. So he line drive to left, next to bat, 4 or 5 pitch walk. Third at bat, he's facing a bow and arrow guy with his team down. So when he walks, the team's already down 9-0. I talked to him after the game. He wanted to steal third. He knew he had it off this submarine guy. But this team had just given up 9 runs the previous 2 innings, and his coach didn't want him to run. Down 9-0. Totally understandable. Last at bat, I'm standing next to a scout, and his hands were so fast as he lined this pitch to the right field, where the right fielder basically had been positioned on the warning track, you know. So line drive falls far in front of the right fielder, but no chance to go to second. But his hands were so fast on that swing, the scout next to me went, ooh, like as he swung. I mean, he was suitably impressed. But no ground balls, and he lines it so hard to right field, you don't get a good time to first base. So you never got a good time on him, a running time. You never got to see him throw. There were no ground balls hit to him. There were 2 pop-ups, one to short left field where the left fielder called him off and then came in and fielded it almost on the dirt. And the coach at the end of the inning was like, that's your ball. You have to get that. So the next time there's a pop fly to left field, he just calls off the left fielder and goes back almost to where the left fielder plays and he makes the catch. So you got to see a little bit of a speed there. But if you're a national guy and that's your first look and you're coming in because you know one of the teams that was there had a national level evaluator coming in and that's your look, what do you get off of that? Well, guy who saw it was like, what do I get off of this? So you would have had to go back the next night when Carlos had him 385 on a ground ball to first. You would have had to go. Maybe you could see him back-to-back nights. And maybe you'd see 8 swings. Maybe you'd see 5 swings. Maybe you'd see some ground balls hit to him. Maybe you'd see him uncork a throw. But it's a very different level of look that you can get at a high school player during the spring compared to what you get on college players. And that's why there's supposed to be more certainty in a draft class when there's more college players. I just wanted to give you an example.
And the other thing is that the stats are so much more, you know, when you see...
it's a bigger sample size.
It's a bigger sample size, but beyond that, you have much more ability to filter the noise out in college stats on the analytical side also than you do on the high school side. On the high school side, you're lucky if you have reasonably accurate stats because we try to track down the stats for everyone in our top 100, top 200 before the draft, and you'll get some sometimes, and you'll realize, oh, wait, the official scorer here doesn't keep track of walks and strikeouts or, you know, things like that. And it's like, oh,
okay. Or doesn't know what a sacrifice is.
Right. Oh, okay, you know, things like that. There are a lot of reasons that, it was supposed to be. So, like, that preamble that it was supposed to be that the college pitching was going to make this kind of an easier draft to slot. And that's not really happened so far.
Well, that's
there have been guys, but
the college pitchers haven't separated themselves out yet, and that's been the biggest problem. That has really been the issue with this draft class is that the hitters and the pitchers at the college level have not. No one, very few players, have stepped forward and put their stamp on this season yet.
Well, and the thing about it is that some of the guys who have are guys who were not considered the top guys coming in, and Adam Haseley is a guy who,
right?
If you came into the year,
I think he was a projected, I would say, supplemental to second rounder.
Who's definitely helped his stock,
no question,
with an outstanding, you know, first more than half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, he was number 233 on the BA 500 out of high school,
right?
But I think that people liked him better on the mound out of high school. Adam Haseley is the lone exception, perhaps, of people who didn't like Adam Haseley better on the mound. I had a college coach this year tell me after facing Virginia that his body language on the mound is so obviously like, please take me out. I don't want to do this. And yet...
Yeah, him and Bobby Dalbec need to hang out together.
And yet... Yeah. Great call.
They're both,
a good call. They're
both guys who are like, I will do this because this helps the team. But this is not what I want to do.
Yeah, and which makes me like him even better. Yeah. Again, just...
He's a legit two-way guy, despite the fact that he would prefer to hit.
Yeah, but he's a much better prospect, I think, now on as a hitter than he is as a pitcher. Because as a pitcher, he's still 87, 89, you know, which is what he was in high school. Athletic, strike thrower, you know, that kind of thing. But on at the plate, Adam Haseley is one of the guys who's helped himself this spring.
Pavin Smith's helped himself.
But again, I think Pavin Smith came into the year as a first-rounder, JJ.
Oh, I'm not. The thing about it is there's a difference to me, like, even when I talk about supplemental first-rounder.
He still hasn't separated himself for me because not from what he was before. Because to do that, he would have to hit for a lot of power. And he's hitting for power, and clearly the low strikeout total is impressive. I would not say that Pavin Smith has separated himself. No, I'd say Pavin Smith has been the same as he ever was, frankly.
I feel like that Pavin Smith right now is going to go higher than we would have thought he would go when the year started.
Nah.
Okay.
Nope. I don't think so. I mean, okay. A couple spots maybe, but that's just because other people haven't done. If he is, it's because other people have fallen behind him, like Tanner Houck, not because Pavin Smith's having some bopper year.
Well, that's
because Pavin Smith's having a good year, but he's really not having this massive year. It's the one analytical aspect of that. The lack of strikeouts that he's doing to an exceptional degree, but I don't think the other stuff is really any different from what Pavin. I mean, again, this guy was like 106 out of high school. So when you're that high on the high school on the BA 500 out of high school as a high school first baseman, I'd expect you to go out pretty good as a college junior.
Okay, what about Brendan McKay?
Brendan McKay is the one guy who's totally separated himself from everyone else. You know. I feel like the tide has turned a bit as he's gotten into ACC play in terms of pitcher, hitter, real split. I feel like he's, in my mind, better on the mound than he is as a hitter. And I will also say again, I feel like there's less separation between him as the best pure hitter in the draft, him and Pavin Smith. That, you know, again, you come into the year, those are two of the small clutch of best pure hitters. And I feel like at the beginning of the year, when McKay's power really jumped up a bit, he got off to a really good start offensively, that people got a little excited about Brendan McKay's power. But starting really with the series over at NC State, where he was kind of held in check offensively the whole weekend, I think he had a home run and a double. You know, he's slugging .673 now. He's hitting .398. That's good. 30 walks, 17 strikeouts. That's really good.
No one will complain about that.
It's not Adam Haseley.
No.
Adam Haseley's been better. Whereas on the mound, it's 76-12, strikeout to walk, 1.19 ERA. And I just feel like Brendan McKay on the mound is ready now to pitch in a big league rotation.
Right.
I mean, I know that's lofty, but I just feel like his fastball command is at a major league average fastball command, JJ. And maybe I'll have to bear down on with some scouts. I bet you I'd get better than that. He has that kind of fastball command,
I think. Two guys I think of in recent years, and it's not perfect because they're right-handers, he's left-hander. So he's better as far as that.
Right.
But the two guys I think of like that, when we talked about Nola a few years ago, and the selling point of Nola was...
That's a good call.
...was that it wasn't that he was going to be a future one or two. It was that you take him and... Sure, that first year, you're just going to keep his innings down because he's pitched a full year, all that. But he goes into spring training, that first full pro season, and you're saying he's either in your rotation to start or you just keep him down there for a couple of weeks just to, you know, for service time and all.
Right.
And we saw the same thing with Mike Leake. Mike Leake basically never threw a minor league pitch before he was in the Reds starting rotation. Yeah. This is a guy
Those are two good comparables in terms of... Advanced command,
ability to pitch. Also, with both of those, McKay's fastball is good. It's not like it's below average or anything like that, but it's not that you walk away from it going, it's the command, it's the ability to use all of his pitches,
angle
command, all those things.
Good light life on his fastball.
Which was also true with Nola and Leake. And the thing about it is in both cases, I would say, you look at those picks now and... They weren't the sexiest picks in the world at the time that they happened, but those are guys who you say, yeah, that was a good pick.
No question. So you would like to pick in a really good draft year like 2014 was, you'd love to pick a guy like McKay where the Phillies got Nola, which I think was what, 7th overall?
Somewhere around there, yeah.
So, but McKay's gonna go 1 or 2.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if he doesn't go 1 to the Twins, He's going to go 2 to the Reds. I'm convicted
now,
on that.
Now, when we talk about college pitchers...
And Nola did go 7.
When we talk about college pitchers, the interesting thing you said is McKay has separated himself. And J.B. Bukauskas at North Carolina, a shorter right-hander, but with... I mean, when you talk about big-time stuff...
Yeah, the guys that he's always compared to are Marcus Stroman and Sonny Gray. Those are the most consistent comparisons I get. So while J.B. is...
I was going to say, JB says, no, wait a second. Marcus Stroman is a good, he is shorter than me by a lot.
And that comes from his own pitching coach, Robert Woodard at North Carolina. I mean, that's his on-the-record comp. But he's trying to say, like, oh, everyone thought Stroman would be a reliever, and he was a starter. Which I think, to an extent, is true. But I always want to say back to him, so is JB going to play second base like Stroman did? I'd love to see that. But Bukauskas is the other guy who's...
Right, I was going to say, performance-wise, it is hard to say that he has not done everything.
He had one bad start all year, which was at Boston College, just in a degree. You know, I'm making excuses for him now, which, to his credit, he didn't. But it was like 40 degrees and spitting.
But everyone's allowed one.
Yes, correct.
But from a performance standpoint, he is a guy, to me, I feel like he's done everything he can. The reasons that will keep him from going higher than he's going to go, and he's going to go high, are revolve more around genetics as much as anything else.
It's really the size and then the arm action. There's just a lot of scouts who just say it, scouting directors who just say, you know, for me, he's either a guy who will last 5 years and blow out. Maybe he'll last 3 years and blow out. We just don't know. Don't even know that he'll blow out, but that he won't be able to start and carry a big league workload as a starter, or that he's a premium closer. And I just get that from so many people. It doesn't mean that he can't start. It doesn't mean he can't exceed those expectations.
But, also,
but he carries more risk than a lot of these other starters, college starters.
Because with Brendan McKay...
no one ever says that.
No one ever says anything other than you put him in your rotation and he should just... Again, pitchers get hurt. We're not saying that Brendan McKay has no chance of getting hurt. But... he is a guy for you put him in rotation and you expect you're going to get a productive middle of the rotation starter, and he'll hit free agency in 6 years and you decide whether you want to retain him in free agency or not. But Bukauskas, though, the thing about it is that I think he's helped somewhat by the fact that if your fallback position nowadays is dominant closer, he could close but we're talking about a guy who could be a true impact reliever.
Yeah, and we actually have a few questions on the Twitter machine, as I like to say. And one of them is from Steve Nitz. Which prospect makes the biggest impact in the pennant race this year? I mean, that is extremely rare, Steve. But the most big league ready guy for me, even with McKay, I'm talking about McKay, is J.B. Bukauskas. Because I've had two scouts tell me this year, most of the guys I talked to put a 70 or a 7, whichever scale they're using, on JB's slider.
But plus, pitch.
But I've had two put 8s on it. I mean, I've had two people tell me that's a top line. You put JB Bukauskas in the major leagues, throwing his 87 to 88 mile an hour slider, which is where he sits for like five innings with a slider. And it's late. It's sharp. It has tilt. It is straight down. It is a nasty mother scratcher of a pitch. That when he's throwing it at its best, it's as good as anybody's in the major leagues. Now, that is big league ready.
By the way, throw in that this is a guy who you'll see sixes from 96, 95, 96
At his best, he'll maintain it. I will say that's one of his caveats of him as a starter, is that generally, I've announced his games for 3 years now, and I've probably seen 15 JB starts. And I would say when he has a long inning, he comes out and the first pitch is almost always 92. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. It's almost always 92. It will take him a little while to get back. And when he goes into the fifth or sixth inning, seventh inning, he does lose velocity. There's no question that he loses some. And that's, on not pro rest. Mm-hmm. So
that's going over 7 days,
right? And I will say that that's one of the caveats on the BC start. It was actually extra rest as well. They were postponed from Friday to Saturday, So he was off his rhythm a little bit. I'm making excuses for him. To his credit, he did not make any excuses. But if just for example, if JB were to fall to 7 to the Diamondbacks, and the Diamondbacks were in contention this year, because they were off to a decent start, now, I do think the Diamondbacks, with a healthy A.J. Pollock, are contendish, you know, then I could see that. If the Reds were miraculously still in it, and they got Brendan McKay, those are the two big league ready guys.
Those are the two guys.
And now, the thing is, they both started throwing pitches that matter in February.
Right. That's the thing about this is that I don't see any scenario for either of these guys really, because for one, they're going to be taken by teams really high.
Right.
So most of the time, those teams are not going to be playing games that matter in late September.
Correct. But those are the only two guys.
And the other part of it is that even if they could help, these aren't guys who missed half the season or something.
Right.
Where you say, you know what, he's not near his innings. Brendan McKay is starting once a week.
Yeah.
And, oh yeah, by the way, let me do this hitting thing, every other day, every other game and that game. It's not something where you would say, oh, he hasn't been used that much. No, you really, long term, you're going to be better off saying to him, dude, we do not want you. This is not Brandon Finnegan where we want you in October. We do not want you in October.
I just don't see that happening with any of these guys. Ryan Boyd asks, are the Braves targeting a pitcher, bat, or just BPA at 5? I believe they're definitely going the best player available route. It would not surprise me if they took a pitcher again this year, despite their pitching depth in the minor leagues.
I think that they very much view it as best players. If you have a really good player and you have him at a position that you have 4 other really good players, okay, that's not a problem. Yeah. We can always make a trade. But I think they look at it as with the Braves. The Braves are not a team that is going to take a guy. When we talk about the college high school thing, I mean, they're very public about the fact the Braves' risk is not a concern to them.
Yeah.
They're okay. They think that they mitigate risk by volume.
I think the other great thing, the other thing I'm most impressed with the current Braves front office about, so I'm not talking about Braves' legacy of John Schuerholz and those guys. I know those guys are still involved.
Right.
But John Hart, but mostly John Coppola, Brian Bridges, their scouting director, their whole department, farm department. The most thing I'm most impressed about is they have a plan, but they're not afraid to adjust that plan when there are new facts on the ground. I've been very impressed with that with the current front office. I think they fully intended last year to go Freddie Gonzalez and like not be good and kind of see what happens. But then they came out and they were awful. They were awful. They didn't plan on, oh, we're going to fire this guy a month into it. And then you see Brian Snitker come in, and Snit's like, I know we were thinking we were going to platoon some guys and maybe Malik Smith will play. Ender Inciarte needs to play. He needs to be the center fielder. We're going to play him. I mean, I think the Braves are, so I think right now the Braves might be, in their minds, locked in. Maybe they think, well, we're going to keep on adding to this pitching volume. But the Braves are not afraid. If someone jumps up and smacks him in the face and says, draft me, and he's a position player, the Braves are going to draft him. I mean, they're just, there's the consistent part of this is there 7 out there? We're looking for 7s. Everyone is, but the Braves aren't about that mitigating risk, like you said. So I respect their ability to adjust.
The thing I'll throw out with it also is that stands out to me is when we talk about high school pitching, the track record in recent years on top of the, a first round high school pitchers.
Malo.
Very, very frightening.
Yeah, I mean, it is.
Let's just right now again, this is.
Let's digress.
But slight digression. Let's just take last year's draft class, okay? Which looked like a pretty good draft class. And again, we are so early in it, we're not writing anyone off, we're not saying anyone, but let's just look at it. Riley Pines pitching in low A. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's exactly where you expected to see.
We're just looking at high school pitching, right?
Yeah, I'm leaving the Braves out of it for a minute because I want to get back to them.
But Braxton Garrett and Matt Manning, not in full season.
Braxton Garrett, we are still waiting for Braxton Garrett to throw his first official pro pitch.
That's not normal. It's not good. As I like to, I always think of Warning Sign, which is a great Talking Head song on more songs about buildings and food. But that is, his name just makes me start thinking about that song.
But, okay.
Jason Groom
has
had, alias Jay.
Jay Groom has had one outing, which did not go well, and ended in injury. Again, it's a minor injury. This is not a long-term.
Yeah. But I'm just going to go, by the way, draft picks 12 to 14 from 15 last year. Jay Groom, just a mild muscle strain, it sounds like. Yeah. So, whatever. Josh Lowe, ouch, babe. Bad start. Will Benson, put him on your list. He didn't make a full season
right.
club. Alex Kirilloff, Tommy John surgery. That's
And again,
we're barely into their careers.
Right. This is
not
writing
them off, but you would rather they start better than that. That's
right.
all we're saying.
But the point being, if you said of the high school pitchers from last year's draft class,
Forrest Whitley,
hey, thumbs up.
Yeah.
So far, so good. But Ian Anderson stands out because Ian Anderson is out there and he's
loving every minute of
he's
it.
He's looking very good for Rome.
Cole Reagans, by the way, with the Rangers, is extended spring. But just talked to our man in Arizona, Bill Mitchell, who's doing extended spring notebooks for us. And he's talking about doing one on Cole Reagans because the buzz is good on Cole Reagans. He's really just being held back in extended spring to monitor his innings and manage his innings over the course of the year.
We don't want to go, again, a guy being held back in April is not, for as a pitcher, it's not that unusual.
Exactly. Because it's really different for position players than for pitchers.
Because for a pitcher, you are saying, look, we're only trying to get you 110 innings maybe, max. You know, so some teams like to do that by limiting innings by start. Some teams like to do it by starting them later, all that.
But back up the year, Braxton Garrett with some playing time.
But back up the year before that, and the Braves, Mike Soroka and Colby Allard are pitching in Double-A, and I think both right now have sub-2 ERAs with good hits allowed, you know, rates and all that. They're looking really good in Double-A.
Looking good.
And that's in a draft class where you've got the computer in front of you. But
Colby Allard was the first high school player drafted, a high school pitcher drafted in that class, and he was all the way down at 14. Brady Aiken was and Phil Bickford were first and second year out of college, I mean out of high school, but they were JUCO and
an IMG Academy.
Ash Russell, not good so far. Unfortunate for Ash. Bo Burrows with the Tigers.
Was the
next guy, and he's in Lakeland, and that's a great sign in my mind. He's also off to a good start there. But Mike Nikorak, Tommy John surgery, has had a difficult start to his career. Very worrisome, disappointed for him. Those are the high school pitchers who win.
Again, and you go back the year before that, and that's Brady Aiken, that's Tyler Kolek. Again, the track record overall.
First time we ever had high school pitchers go back-to-back, 1-2 in draft history, was in 2014. That is just so incongruous, JJ, considering what we think we know about high school pitching. But and in the midst of this kind of Tommy John epidemic, and of course they both had Tommy John.
But the point being, the thing that stands out to me about that is that the Braves go high school pitching.
Mm-hmm.
They are one of the teams who takes high school pitchers in the first round as much as anyone. And by the way, if you've taken a first round high school pitcher, we want him too. Because we'll take Max Fried, Tuki Toussaint. We want those guys too. But the point is, and they've had success developing those in a way that many other teams have not. So my point being with that is that, again, if there is a high school pitcher on the board at 5 that they like,
right,
there will not be any fear on their part of taking him because they say, no, we feel like we have a way to do this.
They can and do draft high school pitching with conviction. One last kind of Braves question because Braves Twitter is lit. Mark Elgis asks, who's the better rebuild in your eyes, Phillies or Braves? JJ, I actually had this bet last year with Matt Eddy. So we're still waiting about that. And, I think we set a 3-year time limit on this one. I was more about the Phillies, I think, at this time last year. No, I thought the Braves would be better at the big league level, and Matt thought the Phillies would be better. Matt was right about that. It's a good question. I mean, the Braves have a deeper farm system, but I think they're both pretty satisfied with where they are.
The thing about it is the Braves have a deeper farm system, but the Phillies have more guys at the upper levels.
Right.
And it's
more hitter-centric than pitcher-centric, so if you like that.
The best way I could put it is that this is a cop-out answer, but I would say yes.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I do think that both of them are doing rebuilds that
I would agree. I see
the plan.
Yeah.
Like, it's a logical progression. Again, that doesn't mean it's going to work out perfectly or anything like that. But the Phillies are doing this, and you say, okay, Jorge Alfaro is sitting there in AAA. I got to imagine at some point this year we're going to see Jorge Alfaro.
Unless Andrew Knapp is just tearing it up in the big leagues, which I just, you know, maybe, but I don't see it happening because catcher is hard to tear up as rookies.
But, and then, you know, J.P. Crawford, I know he's off to a slow start. I still think we're going to see J.P. Crawford at some point this year.
Yes.
And then you...
I really would like to see that.
You know, again, we could keep going on their AAA team is got a lot of guys who should play in the big leagues at some point this year. They have, and then I really like their depth, especially of arms. Like, I think they're a very deep team, too. Like,
yeah.
The best way I can put it is when I was doing South Atlantic League stuff last year, that, you know, their club, their Lakewood club, there were a whole lot of pitchers who you say, okay, this guy is not going to be a frontline starter, but this guy's going to pitch in the big leagues in some role. This guy's going to pitch. Sir Anthony Dominguez is a guy who's not like one of their...
I love that name.
I love that name. He's not one of their top guys by any stretch. He's no, you know, he's not Sixto Sanchez or anything like that. Sir Anthony Dominguez is going to pitch in the big leagues in some sort of role. And he may be, you know, in the not that distant future because there's stuff and there's improvement going with it. The Kelemays of the world, you know, again, they have a lot of guys who I like. And then you look at the Braves and you say,
prospect rotation basically at every level, full season ball.
Right. And the other thing that stands out with the Braves is that you mentioned Ender Inciarte. The thing you have to do with this is that, and the Phillies, I think the Phillies have done this in some ways also, but the Braves. Like, we talk about the Swanson trade. And let's make it clear now. Ender Inciarte is good enough that Dansby Swanson, I think he'll still catch that point.
Yes.
But he's got some work to do be the best player that they acquired in that. Because
no question.
You are talking about an everyday impact center fielder.
If the Braves had traded Shelby Miller for Ender Inciarte and Aaron Blair, you would have looked back at that and said, oh, that has a chance to be a decent trade.
And you look at it now and you say, they won that trade and it's running away. I mean,
and that's with Aaron Blair not getting it done yet.
Right. But you look at it and you say, you do that and Dansby Swanson. But to me, what the point is that Inciarte has ended up, you got to have core guys.
Yep.
And you look at this Braves team now.
They might have gotten two.
And you say, okay, I look at it now and say, if you said the 2018 Braves, who are the core guys who are in the big leagues right now? You've got Freddie Freeman, core guy. You got Inciarte.
Freddie Freeman, I think I heard some stat the other day about Freddie Freeman being like, there's some stretch of time where he leads the major leagues in home runs or RBIs or batting. I mean, he's...
The new park's going to help, by the way, huh?
Right, but he started taking that jump forward last year.
After a brutal start, if
I remember. He had a terrible start, but I know that his strikeouts for the year went up pretty high. But it's just amazing that in the minor leagues, first of all, I just remember talking to people pre-draft and people being like, you know, I'm not sure Freddie Freeman's not a better pitching prospect, which is kind of funny. And number two, that we always thought of him as Jason Hayward's wingman. I did.
Uh-huh.
And I guess he sort of started out that way, but...
They made the right call.
Player development continues at the major league level. You can't just get there and here I am. And Jason Hayward did not... It hasn't been a straight line of him just keep getting better. It really kind of has. For Freddie Freeman, it's just really impressive. So that's your core. Freeman, Inciarte, Sweeney. I mean, that's Swanson. Who the hell is Sweeney? Dansby Swanson.
So that gives you three guys. Well, that's, again, then you start saying you've started to build. Because, again, you have to have, then you put complementary players around them and all that. But that is far beyond where the Braves were. 2 years ago where you said they had Freddie Freeman and nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll just say this for the Phillies real quick. They're very fortunate at AAA to have Rhys Hoskins as their AAA first baseman. I don't know who's managing Lehigh Valley. I suppose I could look that up. But
I will look that up while you...
Look that up while I... It has to be a difficult team to manage because Dylan Cousins is there with his 21-5 strikeout to walk. Jorge Alfaro with his 15-1 strikeout to walk. Nick Williams with his 16-1 strikeout to walk. Roman Quinn with a dispiriting 20-2 strikeout to walk because Roman Quinn is not supposed to be hacktastic. At least as a manager, you can say,
Dusty
okay.
Dusty Wathan, by the way.
Pardon?
Dusty Wathan.
Dusty Wathan. At least Dusty can take a deep breath when Rhys Hoskins gets in the box and say, okay, here comes a quality at bat. Because Rhys Hoskins can hit. And this is the guy who... really fits also. He's just not a high-profile prospect, but we had him number 8, I think, in the top 10 this year. Ben Badler's... He is right in Ben Badler's bailiwick of players. Latin or non-Latin. I mean, I think we all think of the Latin American as Ben's bailiwick. But the other thing that he likes is guys with good hitting approaches. he's all about that. And Rhys Hoskins is right up his alley. And Rhys Hoskins is important because, you know, Tommy Joseph had a great year last year. Let's see him do it again. And the Phillies are giving him a chance to do it again. But do I think he's a long-term piece of the Phillies rebuild? I'm not sure. But I think Rhys Hoskins is more likely to be their first baseman when they contend than Tommy Joseph. And he's showing you why right now. It's early, but this is who he is. He draws walks. He will strike out, but he will hit for power, and he hits for pretty good average. I like Rhys Hoskins. He's going to be. I think he's going to be
tested. I liked him when he was in the FSL.
That's right. I remember you talked about him in the Sally League, actually.
That's what it was. Sally League, yeah.
So anyway, and he was a fifth-round pick. So the, you don't just make your draft in the first round. You make it throughout. But we do focus on the horse race a lot.
So now, back to the draft a little bit before we wrap this up.
We have a draft question. One more from Simon at Federer Funhouse. I think I picked up a lot of tennis fans when I tweeted out that picture of Steffi Graf and Andre Agassi at the North Carolina NC State game last Friday. Did you see that, or you missed that in Atlanta?
Yeah, I missed that one in Atlanta.
Andre's son, Andre and Steffi's son is a freshman third baseman at a Las Vegas high school, and apparently he's a dude. So they were school
shocked. I'll say this. Genetically, I am shocked. Shocked, I say.
Yeah, but he's athletic.
Yeah.
What kind of legs has he got? Is he good mom's legs or dad's legs? For everybody's sake, I hope he got dad's legs. Because if he got mom's legs, that'd be confusing. I'm putting an 80 on those legs. Simon at Federer Funhouse asks, what are you hearing about the Jays and their two picks? You know, in the first round, again, the Blue Jays changed scouting directors. Steve Saunders, not Brian Parker anymore. I just think we see in general, JJ, that the Blue Jays are not the Braves. They do want to mitigate risk. And when you're drafting at the back of the first round, I think you're going to see the Blue Jays take college guys and try to mitigate their risk in that regard. I think they would love to find some college position players lurking toward the back of the first round. That's kind of where those guys fit this year, is the back of the first round. And if my Y key would just be working on my computer, I might be able to look for what I did with the Blue Jays because I can't get to them. At 22, I had them taking Jake Berger of the Missouri State, Joker.
The funny thing with this is, again, it's not that there's not college guys. Every year, there are college bats who produce.
Yes, Jake Berger is one of those guys. And then I also had them taking Will Crow at 28, so college bat, college arm. That's where I see them going. So, I do see the Blue Jays being in full college mode, full mitigate risk mode, JJ.
But the other thing I did want to touch on before we wrap up.
Thanks for the questions.
But in the mock that you released yesterday, Brendan McKay won.
Mm-hmm.
You have, and again, you write in there a lot of different directions Twins could go. Twins control where this draft goes. Hunter Green too. And Hunter Green is...
Hunter Green wants to try to control where this draft goes too. Hunter Green and his orchestra, as they say.
So on the high school side, I do feel like it is what has happened now is Hunter Green, Royce Lewis have always been there.
Mm-hmm.
Austin Beck, Mackenzie Gore have put themselves in that discussion too.
I believe both those guys would be saying we here if they're in this podcast. Yeah. It is remarkable to see Austin Beck up there. It's not remarkable to see Mackenzie Gore up there. Mackenzie Gore has been a dude. Austin Beck was a dude, but then he tore up his knee. So Mackenzie Gore being up there is not a surprise. It's a bit of a surprise that he's overtaken D.L. Hall to be the number one prep lefty in this draft. There are at least two clubs I've spoken to who intimated to me that Mackenzie Gore was the number one pitching prospect on their board in this draft, period. High school or college, Hunter Green or not. And that is really like the philosophical discussion that you and I sort of had by the out over the short wall the other day of Hunter Green throws a hundo now, 98 all the time. I got lots of videos of people tweeting at me or texting to me from Southern California, like, hey, here's Hunter Green's first pitch, 97. Mackenzie Gore touches 96. He'll pitch at 93 to 95 at his best. The other day he was sick and he pitched 90, 91 and touched 93. That doesn't bother me. I think it bothers you more than it bothers me. No, maybe bother's not the right word.
No,
but
the thing about it is that his is within that range. To me, you're not talking about a guy who you're having to project to get to an above average fastball. That it worries me less than when we were having a discussion yesterday. I was being a little contrarian that morning, I guess.
That's fine.
He is already showing right now that, you know, if he, I think with high school guys, you've got to ask it three ways. Is it going to get better? Mm-hmm. Is it going to stay the same? Or if it gets worse? Mackenzie Gore is throwing at a velocity at which, that let's say that going to a five-day rotation.
Which he's done on a couple of starts this year, by the way. He's thrown on a pro rest a couple times this year because he is thinking future, not just now.
But if, let's say, because a lot of guys do. A lot of guys, we talked about Tyler Kolek. Tyler Kolek went from throwing a hundo in high school to throwing 92,
right,
you know, in pro ball. Like, he really had trouble adjusting to a five-day rotation.
Or I'm reading about Lucas Giolito in February of his draft year, sitting comfortably 94 to 96 and pitching at a range of between 92 and 99 with his fastball.
And now, you know, he's sitting at the lower end of that range at best, you know, generally when he goes out right now. Mackenzie Gore is at the point that, even if he doesn't gain any more velo, which he might because he's kind of...
He will. You can say that with extreme confidence because I've had, again, two scouts tell me he's the best athlete in the draft.
He's got
athleticism. Not just best athlete for a pitcher, best athlete in the draft. So he's a projectable frame and supreme athleticism. And those are the reasons that people have such confidence in him.
And so that's why he is in this discussion. The interesting thing with this is because I don't want us to go on for too long because we got a lot of writing to do too.
Yes, we do.
And calls and all that. But that is interesting with this. And if you go to baseballamerica.com, you can get all the slots that are there for every pick. It's going to be different this year.
Right.
MLB and the MLBPA agreed to do something that they wanted to, as they call it, flatten the draft. And so what they did is that the difference in money between the first and the second pick, the second and the third pick, the third and the fourth pick, is less, significantly less than it was in the past. And what they've done is they spread that savings on to, you know, they've given the teams lower down. If you pick 7, 8, 9 this year, your slot is significantly higher than it was. But the bigger difference is, the more important difference is there's a lot less difference between what you can offer and what pick one can offer. Because we do have guys. Royce Lewis is a guy who stands out for this, like from the standpoint of, it's hard to figure out where to slot Royce Lewis. The best high school bat last summer, and I think that was a pretty easy acclamation to say.
Definitely. Yep, definitely true.
He has not torn up SoCal so far this spring. He's been fine. Would that be a fair way to put it?
Yes.
You know, so
he's actually the opposite of torn it up. He's struggled. There's no question that I think it's fair to say that he's struggled.
But so what you say with that is that in past years, if you're say at pick 3, pick 4, and you say, "Hey, we're going to offer you this," and it's significantly less than what this slot is. But if you're Royce Lewis, you would know in those situations, if I don't take this, say, $4 million here, it's going to be really hard for me to get $4 million later on.
That's not the case as much this year.
This year, if someone wants to offer you four, you know, in the top 5 picks, you also know that at pick 8, you could get $4 million.
Yeah, there's a lot more $3 million bonus slots this year than ever.
So what that's going to do is, and on one side, there's a couple things that would seem to. Again, we're speculating here because this hasn't, you know, there's always new wrinkles that people figure out. Every time they change the draft, someone figures out something new, and then they go back and they try to change it to counteract that or whatever. But in the past, it has been, if you are a team at the top, we saw this a lot last year. We saw this with the Padres. We saw this with the Braves. But you at the top, the Reds to an extent too, you could get guys later down who were top guys. The Astros did this obviously 2 years ago. Kyle Tucker, Daz Cameron, Alex Bregman, where Daz Cameron got $4 million as I believe it was the 40th pick.
Right. 37, and something like that.
37, I think you're right. 37 pick. It was easier to move a guy down like that because they could give him four. And so as teams at 10 or 12 or 14 called and said, "Hey, we're interested in taking you," and you could say, "My number's 4, and they couldn't, "Okay, we're moving on."
Right.
This year, it's going to be harder to float those guys down. For one, the teams who pick at the very top, there's teams behind them that pick again in many cases before they pick again.
Right, right, right.
And the other is that there's just less difference in the money. If you are at number one this year, and again, we've seen the ceiling that we have seen in this system is about $6.7 million.
Right.
Right?
Absolutely.
And we don't know if that's going to change, but assuming it doesn't, the Twins will have significantly less extra money to spend there than they would have last year.
Yeah.
No because problem. Last year, getting a guy to sign for $6 million meant that you had $3+ in your pocket. That was more money than a team back drafting at the back half of the top 10
right.
would have for their slot.
Right. I mean, like last year, A.J. Puck, by going from 1 to 6, he lost $2.5 million, $2 million plus. This year, he would lose less than that. I had the bonus right in front of me, and I just navigated away from it. But
right.
The difference is a lot lower.
So what that means is that this year, logically, it would seem...
The difference is $2 million this year, not $3 million. $2.5 million. So it would gain $500,000. He'd get $500,000 more going from like that one bonus, if he were to get the full allotment, to that 6 bonus. Getting that full allotment, I mean, last year he was like 4-something. The 6 bonus is higher and the 1 bonus is lower. They definitely compressed the bonuses as we were told they were going to do.
Right. I mean, again, Minnesota at the top this year is $7.7 million, which is $1.25 million less than last year's. So, but they have 7.7. So let's say that they sign a guy for 6.5. Again, I'm just throwing hypothetical numbers. They've got $1.2 million in the bank then instead of 2.4. And then you look at it on the flip side, you say, okay, the slot at 8 is $4.78 million.
Right, that's more than it was at 6 last year.
And again, if you have a team that you really like a guy, you know, we usually see this where you get haircuts at the top that you spread late in the draft.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of logic to that. I think the Astros have shown, you know, what that means is if you, let's say that Daz Cameron doesn't turn out, but you hit on Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman, you go, hey, great draft. You know, you spread your risk. You know, they got Carlos Correa and Lance McCullers. And if Rio Ruiz ends up being a big leaguer or not, again, great draft.
He's been there, but he's also
he's having a good
better.
Year. Yeah, he's having
better.
A good year. But
he's in much better shape.
You mitigate. There's a lot to be said for mitigating your risk by getting multiple players. But if there is a team sitting there at the back of the top 10 who's willing to say, you know what, we are convicted on this guy.
Yeah.
Well, you could go the other way, too. You know, if you're
it's going to happen this year with prep pitchers because some of these guys, outside of Goring Green, there's not a strong consensus. Shane Baz is probably the second high school right-hander. D.L. Hall is probably the second high school left-hander. Some people like Trevor Rogers. Some people, I think most of the industry prefers D.L. Hall.
By the way,
I'll
point out, the fact that Mackenzie Gore is the best athlete in this class does stand out because D.L. Hall is also, I mean, is a legit basketball player in his own right. So that stands out as impressive on Gore's part.
It does. That's why Gore stands out so much. But you definitely have, I think you have really good athletes in those top two left-handed pitchers. I don't hear that as much with the right-handers. Although Boz, like Green, is also a good two-way player. Guy's a legit... If he showed up at TCU, he would be a hitter and a pitcher. So
and they'd say we're good with this. We can do this.
Well, not anymore. Yeah, without any more Lucan.
Right, but he's done it.
He only does one though. So
now he does one, but he did both and he did both well.
He did. So it's really interesting for me to see the level of athleticism on those pitchers, and that's one of the themes. The other things of this draft also is the two way guys. JJ, I digress a bit, but that's I get hung up on that because that is a huge theme of this draft, but there are also
because it's not we haven't even mentioned guys like Nick Prado. I mean, we've done
right.
there are other guys who very much I would
Adam Haseley. We talked about him, yeah.
You know, there are it is something where,
but just looking at it, just you know, again, go back just 3 years in the same draft system. Kyle Schwarber at the fourth pick was $3.125 million. I mean, he took a big haircut. He wasn't going to be drafted by other teams weren't as convicted as the late Stan Zielinski and the Cubs were. I mean, that's a epic draft, no question. An epic pick by the Cubs. But, you know, Alex Jackson at 24 at the sixth pick, he got $4.2 million. Now that sixth pick is, again, that slot is like 5.3. So if you signed a sixth overall pick for $4.2 million, that's $1 million plus more that you say that you're going to be able to give this large pool of high school pitchers who are falling all in that 20 to 60 range.
Which is where the success rate
exactly
often is with high school pitchers. So you can easily, if you look, the track record of this decade is that if you are taking a high school pitcher with a supplemental first-round pick, with an early second-round pick, it's not that they're all successes or anything like that, but there is a very strong argument to be made that you end up getting just as good a chance as you do mm-hmm. on a guy at the top of the draft.
I'm just for example, the Rays are an organization where four of their five guys have made starts in the big leagues. They didn't draft them all. In fact, I think they only drafted one of them, but were high school draftees. Chris Archer, who was drafted 11 years ago, if you can believe it, in, I believe, the fifth or sixth round by the Indians. Alex Cobb, Rays draft, was like a 22nd round pick, something like that. Mm-hmm. Blake Snell was a supplemental first rounder, but he was like their eighth pick in that mm-hmm. 2011 draft. Jake Odorizzi was a supplemental first round pick. Again, Snell and Odorizzi were high picks, but they're in this range we're talking about.
Right, and when we talk about this, like
the poster child,
then you can look at the Blue Jays and what they did, because the poster child of this,
Aaron Sanchez and Noah Syndergaard right. in the same draft class.
Four picks apart.
Hoochie Mama.
And again, that what it comes down to is that Noah Syndergaard, to me, is the poster child for this, because Noah Syndergaard in high school, really, this is the difference between high school pitchers go at the top of the draft because they have basically become fully formed, usually in the summer before their senior season and through their senior season. Like you have seen it,
yeah.
You don't have to project it. Noah Syndergaard, because everyone at this point has seen the high school pictures of him and all that. Noah Syndergaard, it came in his senior year is really when it kind of kicked in. But Noah Syndergaard has taken even much further steps since then, just as far as pure stuff.
Yeah, I got to give Nathan Rohde an assist here on Syndergaard, because Nathan was definitely the guy in our office who was talking about him the most. Syndergaard had as much helium as any Texas high schooler leading up to the draft. He led Legacy High into the 4A regional semifinals by two-hitting Trimble Tech in the first round, struck out 10, hit a grand slam against Lake Dallas in the second round, struck out 15 against Birdville in the quarterfinals. Even better in the semis, coming within one out of a no-hitter and striking out 14 against Friendship. Athletic 6'4", 195-pound frame, was dealing 90-94-mile-an-hour fastballs into the postseason. Curveball much improved. Talked to Dallas Baptist recruits. Suddenly could sneak into the sandwich round with the right club. That is as dead on. I'm pretty sure Jim Callis wrote that. But I know Nathan was our point guy in the office. I'm like, hey, this Syndergaard guy is really coming on. But this supplemental first round, JJ, Aaron Sanchez at 34 and Noah Syndergaard at 38 for the Blue Jays. The other guys in that class also, in that supplemental round, also include Tawan Walker, Nick Castellanos, are the two other big success stories.
So we got Tawan Walker, Aaron Sanchez, Noah Syndergaard, and now go to the first round for that year.
Tyrell Jenkins, I don't know if he's gotten to the big leagues or not. Luke Jackson, I believe, has gotten to the big leagues.
Yeah, he was in there last week. Not exactly a, you wouldn't chalk him up as a big league success story yet, but has reached the big leagues.
But he did get to the big leagues. But in the high school pitcher now, Jameson Taillon was the first one. Took him a while.
But hey, that's a success.
Working out now. High school pitchers in that draft. Oh, just looking at Hayden Simpson's name always makes me wince a bit in that draft class. Jesse Biddle.
You'd rather have the supplemental first rounders.
Exactly. Cam
Bedrosian. You'd rather have the supplemental first rounders. You'd rather have, again, this kind of goes back to it, is that
if you're spending
still a lot of money, but there's a lot of feeling, I believe, in the industry that it's not that there's still not high school arms going to go out the top of the draft, but you like having that supplemental first round pick where you can take a high school arm at 35, 38, whatever that round, you know, that spot is.
Of course, the X factor in that draft of high school arms was Caleb Cowart, who should have signed as a pitcher, but wanted to hit. And he got to the big leagues as a hitter. He got to the big leagues as a defensive player. He's still only 24 years old, you know that? 24. He'll be 25 in June. Probably should have pitched. 131 at-bats in the big leagues, though, so we didn't get to rank him this year in the handbook. And I believe we heaved a great sigh of relief at that. So, but he was probably the number two high school pitcher in that class that year after Jameson Taillon. So,
but again, that's our point is there's still, we're a little less than 2 months away from the draft. A lot more is going to shake out.
No question.
Between now and then. Again, a story, you know, there's stories from every year, but the story that stands out, unfortunately for us, the ACC tournament will not be here this year.
Yeah.
But the story that stood out, like, from last year is that a guy like Will Smith, if we were talking about catcher Will Smith, who's a Dodger now, Louisville catcher last year, if we were talking about Will Smith at this time last year, where do you think you know?
Oh, he was like a third-round pick at this time last year, maybe a fourth-rounder. I mean, he was coming on, but he's Mr. Halo Effect, and that is the case for North Carolina. For Mackenzie Gore and Austin Beck, it helped them that J.B. Bukauskas was a magnet. Everyone had to come in here and see him early. And Gore, those two guys acted as magnets for the rest of the state. It raised like Greg Jones. It raised the Bullet kid over in Greensboro. We're going to see a really deep year. It's a five-star year in the state. And you had to come in and see NC State's junior class, which has mostly not lived up to the hype, or Wake Forest junior class, which really has lived up to the hype. So a halo effect is certainly in effect for the Carolinas.
Because once you're here, you're going to see other guys.
Yes.
You've already made the trip. But
that stood out on a March evening or a March afternoon with Western Carolina played NC State on Monday. And it was like, what on earth is going on here? They're like four scouting directors at a Monday afternoon game. And they were all like, yeah, well,
I'm here.
I got Gore tomorrow. I got Beck the next day. And I got Bukauskas on Friday.
Might as well see a game.
We're here for the week. So that's how this stuff happens. And that's how 2010 happened. You were there to go see Caleb Cowart and Deck McGuire. You knew those guys, and DeLino DeShields were there. And eventually, you went up with six Georgia guys drafted in the first round.
That's a frightening cautionary tale.
It is a frightening cautionary tale, because that was a record year in this century, at least, for Georgia first-round picks. And it hasn't worked out for most of those guys.
And the one other story from last year is that's even more than Will Smith is okay, where is Mitchell White going at this time last year?
Mitchell White at this time was on some boards as a 4-7 guy. I'm sure there were other teams that had him maybe as a follow, because I think a lot of teams thought he was a two-pitch reliever. And then it was really about this time that Gabe Rebus, the pitching coach at Santa Clara, taught him a changeup, and he also learned to differentiate between a slider and a curveball. And he went from two-pitch power guy, probably going to be a reliever, to four-pitch, oh my God, sixth in the country in strikeouts, fresh arm, holy crap, wound up a second rounder.
So, and who is already doing very well at high A.
Yes, that guy is a bouse.
So, again, what we're saying is that we're trying to give snapshots of where it is right now as best we can, but do understand a lot of things are going to change. Because, again, you talk about halo effect. Will Smith last year, what happened is everyone was at the ACC tournament, and if you are scouting catching, it's hard to have a better scenario than that was last year, because you had Will Smith, you had Zach Collins, you had Matt, soon-to-be first baseman Matt Theis, who,
by the way,
balls over and over.
It was boxing day every day for Matt Theis.
That was basically, I will say.
But he still has a chance to catch, right?
But I will say that was, I think, where it was like, okay, write him off as a catcher. We want this bat to hit.
Yeah, but I think a lot of that just has to do with the organization.
Yeah.
There are some other organizations that would have said, you know, let's give him a chance. But he would have, the bat's just so polished, that's really what precludes it. It's not that he didn't have a chance to catch in some other idea, in some other organization, some other situation.
But it was something where the bat was going to literally,
so good.
It's the Will Myers situation.
Exactly.
Where when the Will Myers was coming up with the Royals, it's like, okay, this bat's going to be ready in about 6 months. And this glove will be ready in about 3.5 years.
Yeah, exactly.
Do we really want to wait for those 3.5 years? And we're not guaranteed that it'll work.
Right.
And by the way, what happened with Will Myers was that he was teammates with Salvador Perez. And you look over and you go, I'm never going to be that.
In some ways, you're probably thinking, can he catch with thighs that big? And then you're like, holy crap, he can really catch with thighs that big. So,
yeah.
I mean, he just, that guy's a freak. So. Good stuff, JJ. That was that hour definitely moved quickly, and I know that my ad read is not this. the ad read is not the column from The Economist that I copied over to see how many words The Economist runs.
No, but as you're calling that up, I will just kind of remind everyone you know, we try to do this as many times as we can a week, but again, the next coming weeks, John, me, everyone else has a whole lot of calls to make.
You're going to get a lot of Kyle Glazer and Josh Norris podcasts, I foresee. But hopefully you also get some more draft podcasts with myself, Hudson Belinsky, Carlos Collazo on the high school
Hudson's
side.
Hudson's out right now. It's a Boris Classic.
And, of course, the College Guys podcast every Monday. So we'll at the very least, we'll give you a Monday podcast, a Tuesday Facebook Live, and I would hope one other podcast during the week. I don't think we're going to have daily. Yeah. I think we'll have three a week, so... But bear with us. And again, thanks for tuning in to this Baseball America podcast. Our podcast and Facebook Live broadcast are sponsored by Baseballism. Baseballism is the official off-the-field brand of baseball, offering apparel for men, women, and kids. If you are a baseball fan, you need to check out Baseballism.com or visit their retail locations in Cooperstown, New York, Scottsdale, Arizona, and new stores in Atlanta and Chicago. Visit Baseballism.com and enter the code BA2017 to save 20% off. Next time, JJ, I will read that in my Brockmire voice. That'll make it more fun. So, for JJ Cooper at JJ Coop 36, I'm at John Manuel BA. We'll see you on the next Baseball America podcast. So long, everybody.
This concludes our program. Want more in-depth baseball coverage? Be a better fan. Visit baseballamerica.com to get more comprehensive baseball coverage.